This is Geek News Central. My name is Todd Cochran, and the stories that lead today's show are as follows. Apple rumors on Siri. The Hyundai electric bus. The YouTube ad hammer. Social media vetting. And get 180 days in the slammer just by not unlocking your cell phone. Plus, all the news of the day. I want to welcome you to episode 1203 of the Geek News Central podcast for Monday, June 1st. This show is sponsored in part by GoDaddy.com and listeners just like you. Great deals from GoDaddy can be found at GeekNewsCentral.com/GoDaddy. Support this show today at GeekNewsCentral.com/Insider or PayPal.me/GeekNews. Pick up Ohana gear at CafePress.com/Ohana Store. I think I screwed that up, didn't I? Everyone, welcome to the show, and I want to welcome all the new listeners to the podcast. Thanks for being here. Got a great show lined up for you today. It's great to be back in the studio. I got a lot to share about the trip to Tokyo, so we'll do that here in just a very short few minutes. But if you're brand new to the show, it's really important that you basically get over to geeknewscentral.com, and when you're over on the website, get subscribed to the show. It's really easy to do so via the right-hand column of the website on Antutes, Android, via email, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, or via an RSS feed. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, just click the more subscribe options. That'll get you dialed in so that you can get subscribed to the show. All right? Definitely check that out. Of course, we want you to come over to Geek News Central on a daily basis just to check out all the great content. The writers have been putting up great content. So just come over and check out the site on a daily basis. Of course, if you have feedback for today's show, you can email me, geeknews@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter @geeknews. You can join our Slack channel by dropping me an email at geeknews@gmail.com and tell me you want to be part of our Slack channel. You can follow me on Google Plus or Facebook just by searching for my name. You can watch the show on the Roku, on the Apple TV. You can listen on the Amazon Echo by telling Alexa to play the latest edition of this show's name. Of course, you can listen on Stitcher, watch or view on Blueberry.com, or tell your Google Home device using the command, OK, play the podcast Geek News Central. Partner shows include No Better Than Average with Jacob and Jeff, The Gadget Professor, Mr. Don Bain, The Pro Gear Site by my GNC team, of course, the Podcast Legends Show, and the new media show hosted with my co-host, Mr. Rob Greenlee. Of course, this show is supported tonight and every night thus far by our good friends at GoDaddy.com. And we want you to take advantage of the offers by GoDaddy. We're in a new month, so we'll know how we did in May in a few short weeks. But definitely check out all my promo codes at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. There's a deal there for everyone. Save 30% on new product purchases. You can get a .com for 99 cents. Of course, you can get a $1 a month economy hosting with a free domain for the first 12 months, or a $1 a month managed WordPress hosting for the first year, again, with a free domain. All those offers are available, again, at geeknesscentral.com/GoDaddy. Take advantage of them. Go over to the website, check it out, and get hooked up and use my codes. A little bit of a confession here tonight, and I don't know how it's going to work out. I started the show with no earphones in. So I'm going to reach back here and grab the earphones and see if I can set this up while I'm doing the show live, which should be kind of interesting. I don't know how in the world I started the show without that. But, you know, it's just one of those things, getting ready to do the podcast, getting ready to get started tonight. And I'm like, something's wrong. I started and I'm like, oh, I didn't put my headsets in. So anyway, as I'm getting this adjusted, I want to give you guys some feedback here on what happened during our trip to Tokyo, and I had a great time, really, really did. Many of you are following on Facebook as I was putting stuff in the live stream. So, you know, that will probably be, a lot of you will already know part of the story, so of what was going on. But really, it started with the flight out, and that wasn't without drama. We had, let's see here. I think we got to the airport mid-afternoon. My wife, my daughter, my son, we were all there, and turns out that the flight to Narita that we were signed up to be on was pretty full. End up that there was only two seats available. So my wife said, basically, you and Anna, my daughter and I, go ahead and get on the airplane and go. And then there was a flight leaving 30 minutes later that was going to Haneda. And she says, we'll go down and jump on that one. Well, turns out they did not get on the flight at all. So, oh, this is weird. My headphone's not even working. Why is that? Well, I guess I'm not going to have audio tonight on the show for feedback. That's crazy. What's going on? Huh. Okay. Well, it wasn't meant to begin with. Very, very odd. I'm really confused. Okay. Well, there was a cat that was messing around. I'm looking at the audio levels. Everything looks good. So we're making it out okay. So we'll just go without that. But anyway, they did not get out. We did. So we got into Narita. What did we end up doing, if I remember correctly? I was scheduled to get a bus. So we had went to the place where you get a Wi-Fi or MiFi device, and I was in the process of renting that when Anna's boyfriend showed up at the airport to pick us up, and I didn't know he was coming. So he was able to take us to the hotel, which was pretty cool. But my 7-day rental for the MiFi, just as a little bit of a, give you guys a cost idea, was 5,050 yen, which is about $50 for 7 days. And we had four people on that thing almost continuously just hammering it. And it did perfectly good. I didn't get throttled. I know we used a lot of bandwidth because I was pushing videos up and so forth. But anyway, Anna's boyfriend took us to the Hilton Tokyo, I'm going to destroy this, Odaiba Hotel. And the hotel's nice, no complaints there, but it was a very weird room layout. We had booked four people to be in the room, and there was three twin beds, and they were like scrunched together. There wasn't an inch between them. So it was just like one continuous bed with a, you know, with a seam. And it was just odd. And, you know, it's because Tokyo hotel rooms are not that big, but this room was actually one of the bigger hotel rooms I've been in Japan. I've stayed in business hotels where they're just tiny. You know, you go in, you have a single bed and maybe a small desk and a bathroom. And that's about the size of it, you know, very, very small. But, you know, hotel was decent. And her and I didn't last too long. I think we had dinner at a local mall that was real close to the hotel. And then we got up pretty early. Well, we woke up early. It was the weirdest thing. I woke up at like 4 in the morning, and it was daylight out. I didn't pull the curtains, but that's what actually woke me up was we were getting... And I was like, why is it daylight at like 4:15 in the morning? And I'm still a little bit weirded out. I don't remember in years past having been in Tokyo or in Japan this time of year and having it get daylight so early. It was just odd. But anyway, we were both up now the hotel really pretty early. We ate breakfast, 6:37, got out of the hotel, and we got on the train to go to Akihabara. But Akihabara's where all the electronics are, vending games, kind of a lot of crazy stuff. And we got there way too early. Stuff there doesn't open to 10. We kind of assumed it was 9. So we kind of had to wander around for like an hour and a half to wait for things to open, but let us explore a little bit. But it's changed tremendously from so many years ago. I mean, it's completely different. It's really not the place anymore to go and get pre-release stuff. There was stuff you could just find in Akihabara before that you could find nowhere else, and that was not the case on this trip. So anyway, long story short here, spent a couple hours in Aki Harbor, then got on the train station, went to Ginza. There was a place in Ginza. Anna used to work at a ramen place here in Hawaii and Waikiki that the brother of that owner has a ramen place in Ginza. So we went to Ginza, went to his place to eat lunch, and then kind of wandered around. It was weird. That was the day, if you saw on my Facebook page, where they had shut down a street, one of the main thoroughfares in Ginza, and just closed it. And it was crazy. People were walking on the street, but I still don't fully know why that was shut down or anything. But the same time, we went to the palace. And when you go to the palace in Japan, it really, we were kind of underwhelmed. You know, Anna was just looking at the map. She says, oh, the palace is close. Well, that's cool. Let's walk over there. And you see moats, rock walls, and trees. You really don't see in the palace. And then there's this big, you know, two guards, standing guards, ceremonial guards, and then the entrance into the palace, and that's all you really see. But lots of tourists coming and taking pictures of a wall. And a big garden, a huge garden. It was really kind of like, okay. So anyway, and it was hot, really, really hot. But one thing that I noticed, and I had some observations, I hadn't been in Tokyo since the 80s. It's been a long, long time. And before, when I was in the Navy and I was stationed in Guam, and we'd fly to, actually, yeah, stationed in Guam, flew to Atsugi, because that's where we'd fly out of a lot, and NAF Atsugi. There, you would take a train from the closest station in Atsugi to Yokohama, then Yokohama into Tokyo. You could get into Roppongi, Shinjuku, and all those places. So it was really, really hard to use the train train. You really had to know what you were doing. We would often take Japanese train maps, and we would write down the stops, and then we could compare the kanji to the ticket machine, so we would know how to buy our ticket. And what Anna kind of already knew, but I didn't, is she's like, I'm like, well, we were getting ready to leave that morning. I said, so where do you want to go? She said, well, let's go to Aki Harbor. I'm like, well, we need to figure out how to get there. She goes, oh, don't worry, Dad. You just tell Google that we're going from Hilton Odaiba to Aki Harbor. So she did that, and she pressed the transport thing for train, and it said, okay, walk 350 meters to, you know, this train entrance. Oh, don't go down on this side of the street. Go down on the other. You'd go, and basically you'd get your ticket. And that was another thing. The ticket machines now are all digital, and you can select English. So it gives you this English menu. You still have to kind of figure out what your fare is, which isn't too hard. You just kind of look at the board. You know what line you're going on, and you figure out what your fare is. Put your money in, and out comes your ticket, and then it tells you go to track one. You know, on the phone, it's telling you go to track one, track two, track four, whatever it is. You get on that track, get on that train. You got no five stops. You get off the stop, and it basically guides you the whole way. We found out one thing about using Google, though, to direct you. It isn't always the most efficient way to go. As a comparison, on one of the last trips, Anna's boyfriend was with us, and he says, oh, no, you should be using this app. And it was a Japanese app. There's not an English equivalent. But when I loaded it, it was real easy to kind of trick it to know what English, you know, basically put English in, and it would. And the comparison was like a 980 yen ride, which is about $10 to go from point A to point B, where the Japanese app said, oh, 380 yen. And you had to do one less train stop. You go a little bit further on the other, catch another line. So it was like a $6 savings. Now, that was cool to know that at the end. But really, anyone that goes to Japan now, especially if you're in Tokyo, you'll have no problem, absolutely no problem whatsoever transporting around. Now, we were using cash the entire time to buy tickets. So you had to stop and, you know, get a new ticket. But they have this thing called a Sika card. And basically, you can get it at not all train stations, but most. It's a black vending machine, and it's got the Sika card imprint on it. And you go there, and you put in at least 1,000 yen, 500 yen for the card. You type your name in English, kicks your card out, and you got 500 yen credit. So I would basically charge mine up to 2,000, and then no more having to go to the ticket machine. You just basically would follow the app, go to the train station, you put the Sika card on the train entrance, boom, you're in, get off the train, boom, you hit it again, and it basically tells you how much your ride costs, how much credit you have left on your card. So that was incredible for the train system, very easy to navigate now. But one thing I'll have to say, and I'm taking a lot of time on this, but I wanted to kind of give you guys some insight, and I kind of made a comment on it on my Facebook page. You know, many of you probably don't know what manga is, but manga is basically Japanese cartoon books, and they or anime books. I shouldn't even say, I call them cartoon books, anime books, and they're usually thick. They're usually 400 or 500 pages. And there's ones for kids, and there's one for adults, and then there's ones that are adult type of manga. And we walked into a place that sold manga and a bunch of other stuff. And I told Anna, we just got to go in here and look. And most of the stuff is cellophane wrapped, so that you really can't leaf through, because Japanese will just stand there and read them in the store. But you can tell by the cover, there's something about Japanese anime and the depiction of young girls in provocative clothing with that just isn't right. And it really... You know, I kind of knew 20 years ago that this was kind of a thing, but we were in this store and it was packed. Well, not only guys, girls too, wall to wall, buying the latest edition of this adult type manga magazine that I scratched my head a little bit, because I don't get it. I really don't. And I'm just, the sexification, and that's the word I'm going to use, of very obviously underage girls in these magazines is troubling. And it's bizarre to me. It would not, I don't know if any of this type of stuff is sold in the United States at all, but it makes you go, just a little bit. I guess that's all I'm going to say on that. But it really disturbed me to the extent of some of it that was there. But I understand anime and all that, but this depiction of young girls, it's just, something's not right. It really isn't. And the number of people that were in there on a work day buying these was unnerving to me to a certain extent, to actually a lot. But anyway, day two, fish market, very early in the morning. We had sushi for breakfast. Went to Tokyo Skytree. Many of you saw the video and stuff I put on Facebook. We went to Shinjuku. Then we went someplace to some kids' street that was wall-to-wall people. That was crazy. Then we transferred that day to Tokyo, the Hilton Tokyo Bay Hotel. And they moved our luggage. We actually had to pay about $40. They moved our luggage that day from one hotel to the other while we were hanging out. That was fantastic. So we got there, checked in. Our baggage is brought up to our room. Many of you saw the pictures I put. There was, the room had an Easter theme. We were really like weirded out about that, being it was late May and it got this Easter theme. Turns out that Disney was still doing an Easter theme at Tokyo Disney, and they don't, it's not a religious thing. It's more of a spring thing. So that's from like around the time Easter is to June 15th. And there was eggs and it was just odd too. I thought that was really weird. And the room was made up very, very odd. Hotel was not as nice as the Tokyo Odaiba. But anyway, it's a room you're sleeping in it. We used points. I didn't have to pay for a hotel. That was good. Went to Tokyo Sea the first day. And I'll give one observation about Japan and shopping and everything. It has become America Central. It used to be all these unique little Japanese shops. And we were in tourist trap area. But I could have went to Waikiki and got the same shopping experience for a lot of the stuff we saw in the areas in Shinjuku. Maybe not so much in Akihabara. But I'll be honest with you. I have no desire to go back to central Tokyo anytime soon. The cultural significance there has really declined. We did go to a shrine on the second day. That was about as cultural as we got, but it was, you know, that was even commercialized a little bit. And I'll have a video to put up on YouTube. I put some of it up already. But overall, I was not impressed with Tokyo Sea or Tokyo Disneyland. A lot of rides were closed. And again, I don't know, maybe I'm Disneyed out. I know a lot of people are fanatic about going to Disney, but I think the thing that blew me away was, again, these people observations in that in the early 80s when I was going to Japan, very rarely did you see an overweight person. Japanese have been typically very thin, but it must be the American influence and all the food. I saw a lot of fat people in Tokyo. Life expectancy is going to go down. There is no way that it is going to go up compared to what I remember in the 80s and to what I observed on this trip. At Disneyland, of course, there was girls that were dressed up and guys dressed up in Disney character outfits. Grown women my age dressed in some really weird outfits that we all kind of did like. And I'm too nervous to really take a picture because it would be a little bit too rude. But it was, to me, as like, and it's going back to some of that Japanese unique stuff. But anyway, interesting. So again, Tokyo Sea Day 3, Tokyo 4, Day 4, Tokyo Disney. We had to wrap up and be back. Really, to get to the hotel, we had checked out, but they let us use the spa. Japanese spa or health fitness center is fantastic. Swimming pool, hot sauna, steam sauna, hot tubs, cool tubs, the whole nine yards, showers. Any of you been to a Japanese onsen, you'll know how fantastic that could be. This is kind of like a mini one of those. Anyway, got cleaned up, got have to get all the grime and dirt off from being walking around Disney all day. Then we went to Haneda to check in. And one thing we're finding out about flying standby in international is you don't go to the gate until they know if you have a seat. So an hour and 10 minutes before the airplane departs, they call us up and they've got two seats. We kind of knew there was only going to be two seats. And basically Shiko says, okay, you and Chris go home. I will see if I can get on the later flight. 2 hours later, another flight that was going to Kona. She did get on that later flight, but we all made it back here yesterday. But hour and 10 minutes, and I have to go through security. I have to go to immigration, and the airplane starts boarding like 10 minutes after I get the ticket in my hand, right? You don't jump the line. You stand in line, and you're nervous, and you know they're being very slow. They're going through the immigration system. We got through immigration and we ran to the airplane, and that's the last thing you want to do after you've just got done getting cleaned up is to have to start sweating again because our gate was like a half mile away. But if we didn't run, we weren't going to make it. And we got there and the boarding time, which was supposed to start in 25 minutes earlier, had not even started. So We ran for nothing. And but if we'd have walked, they'd all been boarded and they'd closed the door. But we got on the airplane, got home. And the only thing I will have to admit, I kind of got tired of. And this is just, sometimes they can be too nice. Always, yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you. You know, and it's just, it's nice overload. And I know it's their nature, but a nice overload. I'll leave it at that. So anyway, that was the trip. And thank you for letting me indulge. But it was nice. Nice, quick 4-day, 5-night trip. And back at the grind here. And and Anna's still in Japan. She's coming back on Sunday. So that is the plan for her. She's hanging out with her boyfriend for a couple more days. Much to my chagrin, but it is what it is. Okay, so bada bing, bada boom here. Let me look and let's get into the content because I got a good stack of stuff to talk about tonight that's in my list here. First things first, Apple's rumored Siri speaker is supposedly going to be super high-end, and it's supposed to target Sonos as well. This is according to Dave Hamilton. Dave's a good friend of mine. He's the at MacObserver.com. If you don't listen to Dave's podcast, if you're a Mac fan, that's one that you'll want to get subscribed to. But he kind of goes through this. And but anyway, that is kind of the rumor. And we'll see what happens with this. But it's supposed to compete with Sonos and be high-end speaker-wise. And, you know, I think if we know Apple, that should not come as a surprise at all. Also, there's been a introduction, and they say, of course, you know, the bus run everywhere in Japan, and but Korean automaker Hyundai has finally pulled the wraps off its first mass-produced electric bus this week. It's called ElectCity. It has a range of 180 miles, thanks to a 256 kilowatt battery pack, and it will recharge in an hour, and they have a special charging station to charge the batteries. So that's pretty awesome. We will see where this goes, but you know, buses have already been pretty green with natural gas, but now we're going to have an electric vehicle. But if they can do 180 miles, and I don't know how much a city bus runs in a normal day, I would think 180 miles would be probably pretty normal for a bus running all day. But if they can charge it in an hour, it should probably work out for some city municipalities that are looking to go completely green. No idea on cost yet, on what it's going to cost, if, what the price delta will be between that and something using an emission-based vehicle. Also, YouTube, you know, the YouTube guys are still freaking out about the ads and their ad revenue on their sites. The YouTube adds more details and restrictions around which videos can be monetized. They basically, new guidelines, according to UPVP product management Ariel Barton, says they're taking a tougher stance on, number one, hateful content. And I don't know why they haven't been having a harder stance on that to begin with. Inappropriate use of family entertainment characters. So that's interesting. So they're saying inappropriate use of family entertainment characters. Content depicts family entertainment characters engaged in violent, sexual, vile, or otherwise inappropriate behavior, even if done for comedic or satirical purposes, will be basically banned for advertising. So I thought that was odd. What is a family entertainment character? Does that mean if I have, you know, R2-D2 here and I'm smashing R2-D2, that is a family entertainment character? Someone needs to define that a little better. And of course, incendiary or demeaning content is basically banned and will not be advertised. But that's the only part of the new rules or the clarification of the rules that is questionable on how, where that line is drawn. But the YouTubers will have to figure this out as they go. So social media vetting, or social media examination, as I'm liking to call it, for U.S. visas go live. So this is now active. Selected travelers now will have to provide usernames, detailed travel histories, and more through the end of November. Individuals seeking a visa to travel to the United States may be asked to provide usernames or social media accounts going back 5 years, subject to the direction of the consular officials. The Office of Management and Budget approved the questionnaire that was basically put out for 2 weeks for public review, but the expanded review of would-be travel resumes implementation of President Trump's March 6th directive calling for more rigorous evaluation of those seeking entry into the United States. So we'll see where this goes. You know, DD-5535 is a form that people applying for a visa already have to fill out. It basically, you already have to tell me travel history during the past 15 years, addresses for the past 15 years, employment history during the past 15 years, all passport numbers and countries of issuance held by the applicant, name and dates of all, birth of all siblings, name and dates of birth of all children, names and dates of birth for all current and former spouses or civil or domestic partners, social media platforms, identifiers, also known as handles using in the past 5 years, phone numbers and email addresses used during the past 5 years. So it must be they're going to dig in and see if all that matches. So here's the question. Let's say you have a Facebook account and you live overseas and you need a visa to come to the United States, and you have said a couple of negative things about the country, and you know that you're getting ready to apply for a visa. Do you think that you'll be able to clean up your social media stuff and not have that information known, or do you think that information has already been cached by the government for 5 years? Do they think they can go into a database, pull your account up, and see your real history? My expectation would be is that that is probably the case. They probably have their own type of go back machine, and they'll be able to go back and look at your social media stuff, even if you have cleaned it up. So some people probably will end up getting disqualified for travel to the United States based on some of their history. Now, apparently this new form will expire November 30th. So it's only a 6-month run on this initially. So we'll see where this goes. But if you live overseas and you have to get a visa to the United States, you're going to, some of you will be asked to give up your information, all right? A man has gotten 180 days in jail for not handing over his iPhone PIN. U.S. courts are still torn on how to handle defendants who refuse to give up passcodes for encrypting smartphones. Judging by two recent court case reports in the Miami Herald, in one, a child abuse defendant, Christopher Wheeler, got 6 months in jail for failing to provide a correct code despite pleas to the judge he couldn't remember it. In a different court, a judge let off Wesley Victor, accused of extortion, even though he also claimed to have forgotten his iPhone code. The main difference in the cases is that 10 months had passed after Victor's initial arrest, and as his lawyer argued, many people, including myself, can't remember password from a year ago. Well, come on now. How many of us change our phone passwords very often? So, we'll see what this where this goes. But again, you have your fingerprint. They can put your fingerprint on your phone. They can force that. If you have a PIN, they can't force you to divulge your PIN. But they're not saying that they're not going to put you in jail, which is the... but that's, again, I thought we've had some court rulings on self-incrimination. I thought there was standing already or case law, but apparently not. So we'll see if those lawyers go back and try to use that case law to appeal these, you know, basically contempt of court charges where they put these folks in jail for 6 months. Qualcomm has something new called Quick Charge 4 Plus, and it's a fast charging spec for smartphones. Now, there's only a couple of phones out that have this, but you're going to want to look for it on Android phones that you may buy. Quick Charge 4 Plus is a successor to Quick Charge 4. It basically allows you to charge up to 30% faster. And the way they've done that is they do like dual head charging, different banks of batteries at the same time. and they measure the temperature of the case and of the battery to make sure they don't overheat, and adjust the actual amount of amperage being applied to the batteries to keep the heat down, but at the same time allowing stuff to charge faster. So very, very cool. I don't know if it takes will take a higher amperage or not. That isn't indicated, but keep an eye out for Quick Charge 4 Plus, a part of a Qualcomm chipset. For $100 a year, you can pay for a widget to screen your social media accounts for embarrassing posts that could damage your chances of getting a job or going to college. Well, speaking of damaging Twitter posts, mine really wasn't damaging, but William Shatner had a request from a podcaster to do an interview, and Shatner's reply on Twitter was, I don't do podcasts. So me being a little bit of a smart aleck said, well, something to the effect of, you know, Shatner, you're shitting on podcasting and I'm not going to do Shatner. And he replies it, aw, and then immediately blocked me. But I screen captured his response. So I have officially gotten blocked by the famous William Shatner on Twitter. And boy, the Star Trek fans came out, and there was four or five of them that replied to me, bashing me. It was kind of entertaining. I was just trying to be a little bit comical, but he didn't see it that way. So anyway, it's hard to express emotion on Twitter. But yes, I've been officially blocked by James T. Kirk, a.k.a. or actually William Shatner, a.k.a. James T. Kirk. On a more seriously note, to kill net neutrality, the FCC says broadband isn't telecommunications. Well, just a couple of years ago, in February 2015, the FCC leadership under Chairman Tom Wheeler classified broadband as telecommunications. So so now they have to make the argument in order to kill net neutrality. So we'll see what happens here, but we're playing a little ping pong, and it's all about Title II. So we'll keep an eye on this, but the FCC is going to have to come up with a good cover story on why they say that broadband isn't telecommunications. Lego has a new programmable robotic kit, and it's on pre-order. And it's called Lego Boost, a simple programmable robotic kit. It is available for $159. Includes two motors, a color, and distance sensors as part and the parts needed to build a Lego cat, robot, guitar, vehicle, or imitation 3D printer, which is kind of smart by the folks. So let me kind of show you this kit. Let me get this loaded here. And let me bring this up on the screen. So this is, I guess, if you want to see what it looks like, this is kind of the dealio here. And again, available for $159 with the, you know, the sensors that I indicated. So, you know, if you got a kid that's got some talent and wants to play around with some of these apps, these educational programming apps, this is really kind of the way to get someone started and see if they have an interest. Moving on to a different topic, Uber posted a $708 million loss, and its finance lead has left. Wow, $708 million loss in its recent, quarter, not year, quarter. Wow. Said its first quarter loss was narrower than the $991 million loss it posted in the previous quarter. It had revenues of $3.4 billion, up 18% from the final 3 months of last year. How? Why? I don't get it. Well, maybe I do. Maybe people aren't using Uber as much with all their fiascos going on. $708 million loss is simply incredible. On the BBC, it's being reported that U.S. military data was found on an unprotected Amazon S3 bucket, by an individual that was just looking around at different buckets. He was trying to, you know, kind of exploring, and he, in a security firm, found this and find all kinds of good stuff. The files contained passwords for U.S. government systems and the security credentials of a senior engineer to defense contractor Booz Allen Hamilton. If you remember, Booz Allen was the company that Snowden worked for before he, as a contractor, before he basically became a traitor. So it's an interesting development here. Didn't know that. That's interesting that they were storing stuff on Amazon S3 for as a government contract system. I don't know if any of that. That's interesting. If that's even allowed, I guess companies can do what they want, but probably not a good idea to have an unsecured S3 bucket for sure. Also, best software for malware removal and protection by Extreme Tech has me suspicious. This particular article, and I'll link it up in the show notes, but I look through this. I'm thinking, okay, who have we got here? We got McAfee Antivirus Plus. We have Webroot Secure Anywhere Antivirus. We have Bitdefender Antivirus Plus. We have Norton Antivirus Basic and Kaspersky Antivirus and Trend Micro Antivirus Plus Security. But nowhere in here do we talk about anything about Malwarebytes. I'm suspicious of this particular article. I don't know if it's pay to play. But these are not the only one in here that I would probably consider personally would be maybe Bitdefender Antivirus Plus. Information on that I know is pretty good. You know, I use Norton Antivirus already on my computer, but I don't rely on it to be a malware detection platform. As a matter of fact, Malwarebytes discovers on my system more malware than. And it's usually cookies and stuff, that it detects more than Norton Antivirus does. So I am suspicious on this article, but I have the link up in the show notes. A motorcycle gang in Mexico has, the gang of hackers have been arrested after stealing over 150 Jeep Wranglers. And these folks had the blueprint on how to make Jeep Wrangler keys. And knew how to bypass the security identifier that was in the key fob. And they were able basically to steal almost any Jeep Wrangler within 2 minutes. Basically, they had someone on the street that basically went out and tamed the vehicle VIN number from the dashboard or on the other place on the vehicle. And then from the VIN number, they were able to determine what type of key was made. So really, they were able to stop the horn from beating and beeping and everything. So like 2 minutes, they were able to steal almost any Jeep Wrangler. They drove them south of the border, broke them down, and $43 million worth of parts that they, or $4.3 million, was it $4.3 million? Yeah, $4.5 million worth of parts that they were able to boost and sell. So if you have a Jeep Wrangler, the motorcycle gang has been arrested and your insurance may go down. Walmart is training employees with a Black Friday VR simulator, which is kind of interesting. Walmart's 200 Walmart Academy training centers are planning to incorporate virtual reality by the end of 2017. And they're basically teaching employees how to handle the big crowds on Black Friday and that type of event. So kind of interesting that Walmart's using VR. But because it's so expensive, they're only going to have one VR headset in each of the 200 Walmart Academies, where one student will get to use it while the other students watch. Annie Rubin's Essential is looking into smart glasses with a built-in camera. Of course, Essential, the new hardware outfit from Android co-founder Annie Rubin, may be branching out from phones and smart home accessories into Google Glass-like smart frames. They had dug up a patent that basically has his name on it. So we will see what comes of this. You know, the Snapchat glasses, which I have, are kind of interesting, but they're pretty ugly. I saw one pair of those in Japan. I probably should have took them with me, and who knows, I probably could have unloaded them for some good money. AT&T's $70 bundle is pairing unlimited data with 60 TV channels, so this is something that's new. First, it gave unlimited choice customers unrestricted mobile data. Then it tried to lure people in with free HBO. Now AT&T is attempting to win over more customers by sweetening its mobile deals even further. Today, the company announced a brand new package for its unlimited choice customers, offering 60 DirecTV channels for only $10 more a month than the regular unlimited choice bundle. So if you're an AT&T user and you're looking for a bundle plan, this is available starting today. Plex, of course, Plex has been around for a while. And, you know, Plex is, its background is organizing users' personal media collections. They're basically now allowing folks to basically connect an antenna to their devices so that you can get over-the-air broadcasts from ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, PBS, CW, Univision, etc. So the Plex station, or the HD home run box, will now be able to watch regular TV programming over the air. So a little more flexibility out of your Plex box, all right? Microsoft co-founder shows off his the world's largest airplane. We know Paul Allen's been investing money, and Paul Allen may not be as popular as Bill Gates, but he's still the co-founder of Microsoft and has a huge pile of cash. He's a Silicon Valley billionaire. And he has some outrageous projects, and they today launched called the Strato. What is it? What is this new one called? It's called the Strato Launch Aircraft. Now, I'm going to show you guys a picture. Those of you that are watching the live stream, I'm going to show you a picture of this thing. And Jack, if you're listening, I'm going to be honest. This aircraft scares the living hell out of me. I love aviation. Don't get me wrong. I'm a big aviation nut. But when I saw this thing, and let me see if I can blow it up a little bit here. It's got six 747 engines on it, three on each side. And I saw this, and all I can say is, I know they've made airplanes like this before, but how do you keep the stresses down from this thing snapping in half? I would hope that they have ejection seats in this thing, but it takes a full 12,000 feet of runway to take off. It'll carry, it's got this huge, what did they say? Let me look at the specs. The lift capacity on this thing is insane. It can carry 250,000 pounds of fuel. And again, it needs 12,000 feet of runway. And these rockets will be carrying small satellites that weigh up to 1,000 pounds into orbit. So it just amazes to me that they needed this big of an aircraft to carry a 1,000-pound. They should have just bought a 747, modified it, and hung something off the wing. It would have been cheaper, I would think, and still be able to get to 35,000 feet. 1,000 pounds is not that much. Well, maybe the rocket satellites, the small satellites weigh up to 1,000 pounds. So I guess whatever it's carrying will be definitely heavier because you need the rocket and the fuel and everything to get there. So I say to myself, no, I don't want to fly on this. It makes me nervous just looking at it. And, I know what's inside wing roots. And if any of you actually saw how fuel is put in wings and the nacelles and how it works to support wings, this has got to have some sort of reinforcement spar. I don't know how you keep this thing from not like ripping in half. And it's massive. It's absolutely massive. But anyway, I have the link in the show notes. Those of you that are watching, don't just tell me, please. Would you guys go flying in this? Jack, how about you? Would you take this thing for a spin? I'll decline. If I have an ejection seat, I'm good. I'll go. No ejection seat, no fly. No thank you. This thing may be stable, but it just, I see it, it just makes me cringe. It really does. According to the European Union, social networks are getting better at reviewing hate speech. Call for Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube and Microsoft to get better at removing hate speech on their networks have been partly acted upon, the European Commission confirmed today. Officials know that in the last 6 months, Facebook did a better job than its rivals at reviewing most complaints within the 24-hour window, agreed with the commission last year. Together, the four companies read 51% of locations within a allotted time frame, an improvement from 40% before the turn of the year. So, Facebook was the best at about 58%. So, anyway, that's what's going on in the EU and hate speech. Apple users have spent over $100 billion in the App Store. That's simply insane. Apple announced today that app developers have earned $70 billion through the App Store. Of course, that's in the 30%, $30 billion to Apple as part of their 30% cut. So downloads increased over 70% in just the past year. That's a lot of money. Congratulations to the app money recipients. Motorola has announced the Z2 Play and a bunch of new Moto mods. I'll have that link up in the show notes if you're interested in some Motorola phones. Samsung is introducing what's called a mesh. Basically, Samsung's mesh Wi-Fi system connects your smart home this July. And they're trying to connect their home smart Wi-Fi system with all their tools and stuff. The system will be available on pre-order on June 4th, exclusively through Best Buy. You'll be able to get buy one Samsung Connect Home for $170 or a pack of three for $380. One unit covers up to 1,500 square feet of your house, while three will triple your coverage. And for those with high bandwidth needs, a pro version with 1,500 square foot range will be sold for, what? Okay, they've got a pro version covers the same area for $250. And up to five devices, giving a maximum coverage of 7,500 square feet. So the router supports mesh networking, allowing you to get your Wi-Fi signal into every nook and cranny of your home. A lot of these are available, other vendors as well. Link will be in the show notes to them that are included in the article. SpaceX today tried to relaunch a used Dragon capsule for the first time. They had to cancel a launch because of lightning. They will try to relaunch Dragon with the reused Dragon capsule this coming Saturday at 5:07 p.m. Eastern. For those of you that are interested to watch the launch on SpaceX.com. Elon Musk today said he's going to leap the president's council after the U.S. exited from the Paris Climate Pact. I'm not even going to talk about that today because people are just being insane all over the internet and don't want to add to any hysteria. But today, he obviously announced that he's withdrawing from that, and Elon Musk says he's departing the president's council. So, that is that. Google Chrome will automatically block annoying ads starting in 2018. So, that's interesting. It will come with pre-installed technology that will block the most annoying ads currently marring the web experience. They're working with the IAB to define what isn't an annoying ad. So I'd be curious to see how that works out over time. But it looks to me like there's going to be a dramatic shift here on the web over the next 12 months as people get prepared for this implementation, because Chrome being one of the biggest browsers that is used on the internet today. Also on the VR headset front, there's a lot of work being done to make them smaller, and a company's been working called Kopin to make their VR headset about the half the size of the Oculus Rift. It's getting some mixed reviews, but this is basically what they're trying to do, is make things smaller and not have to have a 25-pound weight hanging on your head. So it's a little bit smaller field of regard. So it's not getting 100% positive reviews, but for those of you in the VR, I'll have the link up in the show notes for you to check out. All right, Alexa just got some long-awaited new skills to help you keep track of your life. I'll have that up in the show notes if you're an Alexa fan. So there's some new scripts that you can use with it. Seems like it's every week we're seeing some new announcements from that. Hey, as a reminder, if you got any comments on today's show, you can email me here, geeknews@gmail.com. Don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter at geeknews. Xbox Netflix-style game services are now available for everyone. Of course, different article. Microsoft has kept this promise to add more backwards compatibility to the Xbox One, enabling owners to play select Xbox 360 titles on the new machines. But it's the console Game Pass that shows the most promise, a Netflix-style monthly subscription service giving access to old and new games. While Xbox Live Gold members got early access last week, Game Pass is now live for anyone with an Xbox One. And it costs $10 a month. Players can download any of over 100 titles at launch. So, again, everything's going to subscription. You're no longer going to own your games. You're going to be renting your games. Google is saying that their speech recognition in their Google Home device is as accurate as a human. And I don't think that's true. There's oftentimes I'll speak to my Google Home device and it will not understand. Well, maybe I'm not speaking clear English, but it says oftentimes it can't recognize what I'm saying. So I don't necessarily agree with Google's assertion here, but time will tell on that if it gets better. Facebook is reportedly building a teen-friendly chat app. You know, Facebook, we talked about, the data they're collecting, the interconnection spider web of where your data is going. They want to, catch kids young and keep them in the ecosystem. And we'll see what happens with this, but it's being rumored that they're building a teen-friendly chat app. I will probably be a little aggressive and basically telling my son no if that comes out, but that's what the kids like to do now is Snapchat or, basically chat. We were using Line to communicate in Japan. You could make a phone call over a digital IP, so I could call home. I called home, told my son what time the flight was arriving so he could be at the airport to pick us up, all that type of stuff. So Line seemed to work pretty handy doing digital calls while we're on travel. Okay, get Smart Omni Q5. It's a wireless Bluetooth earbuds for $23.99. So these are pretty nice. So I'll have this link up in the show notes. These, for people that work out or want to have a low-profile Bluetooth earbud for $23, not pretty cheap. It's a lot cheaper than $170 earbuds that Apple sells. According to The Verge, Google has come up with a final design for its new London headquarters, and they're calling it a landscaper. It's basically a big, long building that has a garden on top and a track and place to hang out and relax. It's got space for more than 4,000 employees. Again, the rooftop garden with a running track, and has been dubbed the landscaper. So they're working with the zoning commission there to try and get approval for it. A development start in 2018 at the site overlooking London's King Cross Railway Station. Again, the final design was created by a group that was responsible for the 2012 London Olympic Cauldron and the new look of the London Route Master buses. So they had a pretty highfalutin firm do the design. I'll have the link up in the show notes for you to check that out. All right. There's being a recommendation on The Verge. They're telling people not to buy the new Chromebook Pro until Google fixed a critical bug. They said this should have been a big launch for Google. Said the release of the Samsung Chromebook Pro was going to be the opening salvo in 2017 Battle of Cheap Computers. It went on sale May 28th at $549. It's a beautiful touchscreen laptop that looks like it costs twice as much as it does. And it comes with a stylus and forms and speeds you usually don't get on Chrome OS. But the operative word is should, because after the grand unveiling at CES, reality hit, the hardware wasn't finished in time. The software still isn't finished, even though it's now on sale and shipping to customers. The software is a memory bug that crashes the computer if you push it too hard. Until Google fixes it, you should hold off on buying this laptop. And they're holding off on reviewing it as well until those bugs are fixed. So if you're thinking about getting one, fair warning, okay? ViaSat 2 satellite Goliath goes into orbit, and I will make a public disclosure. I own ViaSat stock. VSDOT, which is stationed to be above the Americas, has a total throughput capacity of about 300 gigabits per second. The spacecraft was part of a dual payload on an Ariane flight. It was joined by Eutelsat 172B, a UK-French-built platform. Both satellites will be chasing the rampant market for Wi-Fi on airplanes. So airlines are currently in a headlong rush to equip their fleets with connections that allow passengers to use their mobile devices in midair. And Viasat is chasing that market. But just as a, again, disclosure, I've owned Viasat stock for a number of years when I knew that they were entering this market. And so far, it's been a decent investment. All right. When we were in Tokyo at Akihabara, the Nintendo Switch was launching. The Nintendo Switch Online service is being reported costs about $20 a year. It's the first time Nintendo is charging for online play, but the good news is throwing in a few extras. The online Switch service will offer you online cooperative and competitive play, chat lobbies, exclusive deals in the Nintendo eShop, and a free range of classic Nintendo games, including Super Mario Brothers 3. I'm going to show you guys something I bought. Let me see. Let me turn around. I couldn't help myself. For those of you watching, guess what I bought? I bought Pac-Man. It includes bonus level 256, but it's got Rally X, it's got Caligo, regular Pac-Man, Pac-Man Pal, Pac-Man Plus. I'll probably suck at it as bad as I used to, but I bought two. Don't know why, because I think the reason I bought two is the last time I tried to buy something, I got screwed and didn't get one, so I want to make sure I got one. I think they were like $29.95. I got them on Amazon. So I got those out of the box. My wife was looking at me, why did you buy that? who knows? I'll maybe end up putting one on the shelf. If you're an Android user, this should concern you. Only 42 Android models have been updated to a security patch from the last 2 months. In a blog post detailing how much it is paid for Android security vulnerabilities, the Android team at Google has released information on just how many devices are getting monthly security patches. It's fighting a serious uphill battle. Google says there are now 100 distinct devices where a majority of the models sold have been updated to a monthly patch from the last 90 days, or just over 40 devices with a majority of models sold that have been updated in the last 60 days. So Google uses a metric of majority because despite a phone like the Samsung Galaxy S8 being one phone, it has has dozens of different SKUs and variations in the wild for different countries. It's worthy of some level of praise for Samsung to get the security patch out to most models, even if it hasn't kept up on all models. So there's a list of phones that are up to date within 60 days, and the list is pretty short. So I have that link up in the show notes. If you're an Android user, you need to start asking your providers why they're not updating your phone. All right, one thing that Kirk is doing, our executive producer here on the show, is he's starting to find a lot of deals, and I'm going to include those deals in the podcast, but I'll be basically pushing them to the end. So if you guys want to look at these deals, the links will be the last ones in the podcast show notes. So just some deals that are going on right now. There's a 14-inch dual core IdeaPad that's on sale, a pretty good price. There's some mini gaming PCs with a core i7 CPU for $699, and some other stuff on sale as well. There'll be a link in the show notes. There's stuff. It's a very cool thing. Everyone should, if you don't have a first aid kit, there's a $12 one that's available via Kinja Deals. What else is in this stack of stuff? That was an actual article. There's an article about tweaking Windows colors. I guess I didn't have that as the last article or before these deals. And the last one is Engadget. Is talking about a variety of wire cutter best deals, say $40 on Amazon Echo Speaker, some mouses, Bluetooth kits for cars and a variety of things. So these all these deals will be at the end of the show. So even though talking about Japan, James, yes, you can submit a deal. Definitely send that via email to geeknews@gmail.com. And Mike, yes, Miss Pac-Man in car arcades was even better. I don't know if the... Let me look and see if this actually has Miss Pac-Man or not. I don't think so. Yeah, no Miss Pac-Man. How about that? Well, anyway, for those of you that want to know what this, where I got this, it was by Bandai, BANDAI.com. Pac-Man, Namco. This is kind of the stuff maybe you can find if you want to look for it. I think I had it covered in the show notes on a previous show. All right, let's see if I, did I have any email that came in while I was gone? Let me double check that before we bounce here tonight. I got an email from Nir out of Israel. He said, hey, Todd, where I was listening. He says, I usually and actually almost always listen to you while running. Yesterday when you asked in GNC 1201 where I was, I literally stopped in my tracks in the middle of a vineyard to take a selfie, as you can see attached. Not a great picture as the sun was in my eyes, but there you have it all the same. You can see my Bose, B-O-Z-E, SoundSport headset in the picture. If you'd like to be more, if you'd like, I'd be more than ready to write a review of Bose headset. How do we pronounce this, Nir? You're going to smash me because B-O-S-E is Bose. Is this Bose? Bose headsets? I'd love to hear about it. As your daughter's deposit refund, what a pity. She certainly had a very wrong life lesson. Rather than taking adult responsibility, crying does not get very far. Agree. As to online grocery shopping here in Israel, it's been around for years now. There is no need to go to the store to pick up your order. Your groceries are delivered right to your home and even to the kitchen if you ask the delivery person to do so. When you place the order, you can specify a time and date for delivery to make sure you're home for delivery. All the best. Beautiful. And I've heard from some of you that said you've got grocery home delivery at home as well. And I'm jealous. Got an email from Nancy. Nancy says, I live about 15 miles outside of a small town, but not totally out in the sticks. Our neighborhoods are within eyesight, but my house was just outside of the distance for DSL, and there's no cable service this far out. We've been muddling through with DirecTV and satellite internet for the past 6 years. When my kids got old enough for smartphones, I really had a really difficult time managing data usage. Our satellite internet had some super unpleasant caps, 10 gigs per month, and then it got unusable. When AT&T brought DirecTV, I thought we were in for some serious gouging, but because we are AT&T DirecTV customers, we became eligible for unlimited data on 4 smartphones. Of course, I jumped on it. The only requirement other than being a DirecTV customer was automated payments, which we have anyway. Fast forward not quite a year, and I get an email about being eligible for fast internet. I have seen these plenty of times, and whatever they were advertising was not available at my address, but I always checked anyway. This time when I checked, it said it was available. Wow, something more reliable than satellite. So I went online and looked at the details, and it showed a terabyte month at a price I could appreciate, as well as a reduction in the price of my DirecTV package. I got on chat with a rep and confirmed that this was in fact available at my home, and it would be U-verse internet, in spite of the fact that this was locking me into AT&T Ecosphere. I went for it. For the first time since we've lived on this property, nearly 10 years altogether, we have internet that is always available and can supply us with all the data we will use for a total package of television, internet, wireless phone service costing quite a bit less than I was paying for all 3 before. I now have internet so I can use for education and training all the data I need on our phone lines without micromanaging kids who need it for school when our home internet was not letting them do their homework. Additionally, the installer told us that AT&T is going to run fiber to every home in Baldwin County within a year. Well, I'll be surprised if that actually happens. Some of the homes in the north part of the county are miles apart. We have a half-mile driveway, and we have copper to the road, but 24 megs. Beautiful. It's so much faster than we had with satellite, and with a terabyte per month, I can't imagine ever busting that cap. You might. The downside is that all the pricing and contingent on our keeping DirecTV just fine with us. We had an antenna when we lived up the hill before our house got built, but that wasn't feasible. When we moved down to trees, we enjoyed what we had with DirecTV. we aren't spending a ton of money. And if we dropped it, we just find something else to spend it on. Nancy, fantastic. I'm glad you've got high-speed internet at 24 megs. It's just a game changer, isn't it? And I'm very, very happy for you. But that terabyte will go fast. Trust me. So make sure you are looking at it, okay? Got an email from Lawrence. Todd, great show. I'm in the Charlotte, North Carolina metropolitan area. The stores providing the service are Harris. This is about a food delivery. So those of you who live in Charlotte, North Carolina, the stores providing delivery service are Harris Teeter, Publix. Wow, Publix? Lowe's Food. I've heard part of an advertisement for home delivery possible from Whole Foods, but not sure it was them. I can't afford to shop at Whole Foods. Related to this increasing dependence on web-based purchase, if the internet is locked down the way some would like it, what will the retailers do when the eyeballs no longer stay online due to the reduction in entertainment value? They may need to go back to stocking shelves with more goods and offering deals at the brick-and-mortar venues because folks that get online just to check messages or read news headlines won't always hang around. The resort to purchasing content has been blocked for streaming, thus taking them away from the World Wide Web. Enjoy your day, Larry. Larry, fantastic. Thanks for the email. I definitely appreciate it. Again, where are you listening right now? Take me a selfie like Nir did. Nir's a longtime listener to the show, been with the podcast for years, and he taught me how to pronounce Waze correctly. I was calling it Waz, it's Waze. So that's why I was laughing about the headset. So Boz, I'm assuming Nir, or is it, I can't, because Bose or B-W-O-S, is it Bo? You're going to help me. I know you will. You're laughing. Yes, you are. And a great picture of the vineyard. You're way out in the boonies, dude. Good run. And I did get a workout out today. For those of you who know, I didn't gain any weight in Japan. Not when you're walking 25,000 steps a day. That tends to burn off the calories. So I'm still on track, like about 194 or so. So keep trying to push this down. Now, as you guys remember, next two shows, I will be on travel. I will be on the East Coast. So only audio for the next four podcasts, okay? Just so you know. And won't be doing live, I don't think at all. My schedule's going to be weird, and I'll be recording the show at odd times. And that's a good heads up for our executive producer as well. I'll talk to him about that. Anyway, everyone, thanks for being here. Geeknews@gmail.com is the email address. Those of you who've been following on the live video stream tonight, thank you very much. Oh, Mike's got this deal. 5-day deals, video creators bundle, 2010, just started today, $2,000 of stuff for just $97. So everyone go to my Facebook page and look at this live stream, facebook.com/Cochrane, C-O-C-H-R-A-N-E, and he's got this deal on. So if you're listening to this show, it's 5 days. It's starting today on June 1st. But anyway, that's it. We'll see you guys next week on the East Coast. It's been my pleasure to bring a show. Glad to be back, and we'll be back for regularly produced podcast for the next 2 weeks. But while I'm on the road, no video. All right, everyone. We'll see you next time. Everyone, take care. Aloha.